This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Good evening and welcome to Africa News Tonight from the English to Africa service of the Voice of America, your source for Pan-African news and world developments. I'm Kim Lewis in Washington.
And I'm Yeis Wuhib. Coming up on Africa News Tonight.
You know, G5 Sahel Force is meant to address the security element and the military response to the terrorist threat, but we are mindful that a single military response will not be sufficient.
That's Mali Foreign Minister Abdoulaye Diop speaking with VOA's Mohamed El-Shenawi about efforts to deal with extremism in the Sahel region. Details coming up.
Also, a complaint filed by a third-place finisher halts Liberia's presidential runoff election just days before the scheduled vote. And the UN says in southwest DRC, conflict has left 3.2 million people severely hungry.
We'll have these stories and lots more ahead on Africa News Tonight.
Our top story, preparations for Liberia's presidential runoff election have come to a screeching halt just days before the scheduled vote. The Supreme Court ordered a stay while it hears a complaint filed by the third-place finisher in the first round of polling. Monique John has the latest from Monrovia.
The Liberty Party, led by Charles Bronskin, requested the writ of prohibition from the Supreme Court, alleging a host of irregularities in the first round vote that took place on October 10th. The National Elections Commission, or NEC, filed its response to the court Wednesday. Attorney Dow Ambrose Ma, the director of the Supreme Court's Public Information Division, explains.
There is no electoral dispute before the court as yet. All disputes are before NEC, and this petition is not looking at merits of elections. It's only looking at what Liberty Party is saying. They have a matter before NEC. They want to exhaust that matter before the second round.
As of now, the runoff will be a contest between Senator George Weah, who led the first round with 38% of votes, and Vice President Joseph Boakai, who took second with nearly 29%. Bronskin finished a distant third, winning 9%. His party's complaint cites alleged irregularities at polling stations, violations of electoral laws, and fraud. It also accuses outgoing President Ellen Johnson Sirleaf of meeting privately with election officials to influence the outcome, a charge her office promptly denied. At least two other political parties have backed the complaint, including the ruling Unity Party. Brumskine's chances of catapulting himself to the runoff are seen as slim. The National Secretary General of the Liberty Party, Jacob Smith, says they're concerned with bringing credibility to the electoral process.
The election border on peace and stability of our country. It is not just a matter of somebody wanting to win the election. We have to be able to implement all the policy reform that we have put on the books.
Political analyst Lawrence Yellow worries the process may reinforce perceptions of corruption.
Legally, it's a healthy process, but are the people going to understand this so that they don't go to some unrests? That's our fear, because most of our people are not educated to understand what this means.
The Supreme Court is expected to hear arguments from the NEC and the Liberty Party on Friday. Only after those hearings will the Supreme Court announce whether it's postponing the November 7th runoff. Monique John for VOA News, Monrovia.
Violent extremist groups have expanded their capabilities and geographical reach into the Sahel and West Africa. The death of four U.S. soldiers in Niger last month has refocused attention to the deteriorating security situation in that region. Foreign minister from Mali, Burkina Faso, Chad, and Mauritania came to Washington to gain U.S. support for establishing a G5 Sahel joint military force to deal with terrorism and other threats to the region. Mali Foreign Minister Abdoulaye Diop spoke to VOA's Mohamed El-Shenawi about the force's mandate and the efforts to deal with the core reasons for extremism.
You know, G5 Sahel Force is meant to address the security element and the military response to the terrorist threat, but we are mindful that a single military response will not be sufficient. Of course, if you are attacked, you need to respond, but we need to go beyond. That's why we have also a strategy within G5 to tackle the de-radicalization, to have the scholars involved in the process. So even regarding Muslim religion, for instance, to try to talk to people to teach more moderate Islam. We have also the population to get involved, to understand that this needs the involvement for everybody, the vigilance, sharing the intelligence, what is happening in their communities. But also we need to provide more developmental response to the people, so we avoid the marginalization of our youth. They need more employment, more economic activities to be. So we have a full-fledged activities. Specifically, we have a major ambitious program for development of the region.
With the defeat of ISIS in both Syria and Iraq, it is expected that a flow of its fighters would try to infiltrate North Africa and the Sahel. How would the region prepare for such a scenario?
G5 is one of the responses. Exactly, this is what we are talking to the U.S. and the rest as we come here today for these advocacy efforts and sensitizing the U.S. government and our international partners. Coalition have been quite successful in Syria, in Iraq, fighting Daesh, even in Libya. We are telling if we don't deploy significant effort to also assist the regional efforts like the G5 Sahel Joint Force, so we might just give room for the terrorists who are fleeing Somalia, Libya, Iraq and Syria or Afghanistan to come harbor in the Sahel, because we have intelligence which are showing that they are targeting this region, they are being installed in some area of this, they are having local partnerships with some of the local terrorist networks. So definitely our point is what the Sahel is confronting is a global threat. So if we are not helped to address what is happening in this region, we might have to pay a much higher price because of either the negligence or not understanding the nature of the threat we are dealing with, which requires a coordinated cross-trans-regional response.
Final question. How crucial is finding a political solution in Libya to reduce instability and terrorism threats in the Sahel region?
Significant part of our current security problems are related to the intervention in Libya, which was ill-prepared, ill-executed, and the aftermath was not handled. And without any proper strategy to handle the overall situation, we have created a collapse in part of the northern part of Mali, and also with the expansion of the terrorist network in our region. So unless the Libyan crisis is dealt with and resolved, I don't think there would be any lasting peace in the region. We need to help Libyans to go toward national reconciliation, to reconstruct the army on the base of its unity, but also to see how regionally we can all work to secure our countries.
That was the Foreign Minister of Mali, Abdoulaye Diop. He spoke to VOA's Mohamed El-Shenawy about the mandate of the G5 Sahel Joint Force and the corresponding efforts to deal with the causes of extremism.
An official in the United Nations World Food Program is sounding the alarm about the situation in the southwest of the DRC, where conflict has left 3.2 million people severely hungry. But he says the region's people want something more elusive and something that aid groups cannot create: peace. VOA's Anita Powell reports from Johannesburg.
An official in the United Nations World Food Program is sounding the alarm about the situation in the southwest of the Democratic Republic of Congo, where conflict has left 3.2 million people severely hungry. But he says the region's people want something more elusive and something that aid groups cannot create: peace. VOA's Nita Powell reports from Johannesburg. In the past year, about 1.4 million residents of Congo's Kasai region have been displaced by brutal violence that has killed more than 3,000 people and destroyed entire villages, according to Claude Jibadar, who heads the WFP in the DRC. He says the situation is comparable to well-known crisis zones like Syria and Yemen. Congo, the massive Central African nation, now has the highest burden of displaced people in Africa.
The number of people displaced during that time period is more than the Syria, than the Yemen, than all the other emergencies that you know of. That just tells you about how serious the situation is in the DRC.
WFP is not the only humanitarian group sounding the alarm in the Kasai region. Medical aid group Doctors Without Borders recently warned of widespread malnutrition among children, with rates of severe acute malnutrition as high as 10% in some areas. The violence began last year in the wake of the killing of a tribal leader who had defied Congo's longtime president, Joseph Kabila, whose term has officially ended. Kabila has been accused by critics of dragging his feet in holding fresh elections, in what they say is a bid to hold on to power. The Kasai violence quickly spiraled into ethnic clashes, massacres, and horrific abuses at the hands of armed groups, including Congo's own army. Shibidar, who visited the area last week, says many residents who had fled into the bush to escape violence emerged with horrific tales to tell.
It's the use of machete, it's the systematical use of rape on women. It's really terrible, terrible things. Kasai has been characterized by the beheading of a lot of people. You've heard about the mass graves. It has been a terrible situation. People who are coming out, they are just traumatized. Traumatized.
He says the long-term solution to Kasai's woes is beyond the scope of his UN agency. Shibidar noted the DRC government has made positive progress in restoring peace, along with the UN peacekeeping force in Congo.
It's a question of sustained long-term security and peace. That's the first thing. Without peace and security maintained, now it is calm. It has to remain calm. People have to regain confidence, and they all have to come out of the bush.
That, he says, is the long-term goal. But his immediate goal is more urgent. Without significant increases in funding from donor nations, he says, the agency will run out of food by mid-November. Anita Powell, VOA News, Johannesburg.
You're listening to African News Tonight live on the following frequencies, 15, 580 and 6080 kilohertz on the Voice of America. I'm Kim Lewis in Washington.
I'm Yehi Suhib, 16 past the hour. Here's a recap of our top stories. A complaint filed by a third-place finisher halts Liberia's presidential runoff election just days before the scheduled vote. Violent extremist groups have expanded their capabilities and geographical reach into the Sahel and West Africa. And the UN says in southwest DRC, conflict has left 3.2 million people severely hungry. And for more news and information, visit our website at voaafrica.com.
Successful women entrepreneurs from developing countries shared the secret of their success at a flagship event that took place during the International Monetary Fund World Bank Group's recent annual meetings in Washington, D.C. The women highlighted their success stories to encourage and empower other young women who face the daunting challenge of starting or heading a business. During a special event of the meeting, the International Finance Corporation, IFC, a member of the World Bank Group, highlighted three women entrepreneurs who overcame immense obstacles and cultural barriers to become successful in their fields. One of them was Henrietta Kolb. She now heads the Gender Secretariat at the IFC. She is the former CEO of the Sherry Blair Foundation for Women and has held a number of other international positions. Her focus now is to help bridge the gender gap. Kolb says the UN's sustainable development goals will not be achieved by 2030 if women are left behind.
What's very positive is that increasingly companies very much understand that they can't leave 50% of the talent behind. And so there's an increased interest from the private sector to come on board and to learn with and from us what some of the very practical solutions could be so that we in particular achieve goal number one around poverty reduction, goal number two around economic prosperity and growth, and for sure goal number five, which is dedicated to gender equality.
Kolb says the work that is being done through the IFC reflects the World Bank Group's gender strategy of closing the gap between women and men, but there are still many challenges in accomplishing this goal because of the various complexities involved.
To just give a couple of concrete examples, key drivers of closing assets and jobs gaps are, of course, one, looking at opportunities around accessing affordable quality care, because we do know that women are still shouldering disproportionate amounts and responsibility over unpaid care work. So shifting the needle around that so that women and men can equally make choices around paid work is incredibly important.
Another example Kolb pointed out involves expanding access to assets or capital for women.
And we do know that actually annually women entrepreneurs in emerging markets do face around a $300 billion gap in SME loans. So closing the access to finance gap is of huge importance. And there we work with over 50 clients around the world in not just providing women entrepreneurs with capital, but also which we are calling the four C's, the confidence, the capacity, and then last but not least, the focus on culture and the importance of really changing business culture so that both implicit and explicit biases that everyone in the world is carrying are being addressed so that women entrepreneurs do have access to products and services that they currently might not have.
Anta Babakar Ngom, another young woman highlighted at the event, represents a dynamic new generation of African entrepreneurs. At just 31 years old, she is the executive director of Sedima, Senegal's leading poultry production group. The company, started by her father in the 1970s, has been taken to new heights under her leadership. She attributes her success to her education and from starting at the bottom of her father's company and working her way up.
I was a really good student. I was able to get a government scholarship to go to Paris, then to Canada. So I got my master's, my MBA, and a good job in Paris. But one day I decided to phone my dad and said I wanted to come home. So I came back to Senegal. Regardless of my degrees and diploma, my dad decided back then that I must start from the bottom. So I went back to the field for a good year and a half, working in the field, working in the farms, living in the farms with the farmers, really doing the most basic jobs. But it was a great experience because it's then that I actually learned my job and I learned how to fall in love with it and to develop a passion.
Ngom later secured an office job in her father's company, and it was there that she says she developed her vision.
Understanding or dreaming for my company, trying to think where we should take the company in the next 10 years, 20 years, 30 years. Because in Senegal, there are actually not more than 5 companies that are able to count 2 generations. So it was a dream back then. It is still a dream now. All those projects lined up. I started growing in the company. Today, it's not just the Sedima in Senegal, but it's thinking globally because we just started last month in Bamako. We're starting in Central Africa. So the whole vision is now coming to see the light.
Ngom also stresses the importance of women entrepreneurs having a mentor in addition to family support. She says there were times when she needed the support of someone who had experienced what she was going through as a young woman as she grew her business. With her success, Ngom says, it is now her duty to be a mentor to younger women, providing them with support and encouragement as they work to become women in business. I'm Kim Lewis, VOA News.
Scientists using cosmic rays have discovered a hidden chamber within Egypt's Great Pyramid of Giza. In an article published by Nature.com today, researchers with a group called Scan Pyramids say the 30-meter-long space sits above the famed King's Chamber. The researchers from Japan, France, and Egypt say it's too early to tell what the chamber was used for. The discovery also is a successful early test of cosmic ray technology. It used special detectors to track the movement of subatomic particles called muons through the pyramid's massive stones. The pyramids were built more than 4,000 years ago as tombs for some of Egypt's pharaohs. They've long captivated the world's imagination with legends of vast treasure and curses buried within them. Nature.com says this is the first discovery of a new space in the Great Pyramid since the 19th century.
Meetings continue for a second day between South Sudan President Salva Kiir and Sudan President Omar al-Bashir in Khartoum. Kiir told his counterpart yesterday that South Sudan is ready to cooperate with Sudan on many pending issues dating back to 2012.
My coming to Khartoum today in response to your invitation is really to put a final decision on it. All the agreements that we have been signing all this time, starting from 2012 and coming all the way to the moment that we are now talking in.
South Sudan and Sudan signed several agreements on trade, border issues, and freedom of movement between the two countries a year after South Sudan became independent. Both countries reneged on the issues they agreed to implement in the 2012 deal. Kiir told President Bashir that will not happen this time around.
With these teams that have come here, whatever they have discussed and whatever that will be discussed again, it will all be implemented. And I take the responsibility to be the supervisor of on my team, that I know that I should supervise whatever has been agreed upon, and that must be done.
Kiir told the Sudanese leader the process that led to South Sudan breaking away from Sudan was what he called individual choices.
The fact that South Sudan broke away from Sudan was not really the most choice of everybody. But, the majority, when they decide in a democratic situation, people have to go with it.
Officials from Sudan and South Sudan have traded accusations that the other has supported rebels in their countries. Khartoum has accused Juba several times of supporting the SPLA North, fighting Sudanese government soldiers in Blue Nile and southern Kordofan states. Juba also has accused Sudan of supporting rebels loyal to former First President Riek Machar.
We have listened to your voice of advice that I know. We do not allow any political groupings to be harbored by South Sudanese against the government of the Republic of Sudan. We will not do that. I believe that the same will not happen here.
That's South Sudan's President Kiir speaking to reporters on his arrival in the Sudanese capital yesterday.
And that wraps up this edition of African News Tonight. I'm Yehi Suhib in Washington.
And I'm Kim Lewis. For all the latest developments on the continent, 24/7, visit our website at voaafrica.com.
For listeners on VOA's Nairobi FM station, please stay tuned for the Swahili Evening News coming up at 16:30 UTC.
For all other listeners, please stay tuned to the Sunny Side of Sports. Tune in again at 1800 UTC for another edition of Africa News Tonight. On behalf of our producer, Bill Workinger, and our engineer, Nick Ivanov, thanks for choosing the Voice of America.
Hello, I'm Douglas Simpoga. Join me for Reporters Roundtable every Thursday at 17:30 UTC. We'll take an in-depth look at an African news topic important to you. We'll have African journalists and expert guests share their ideas on the topic at hand. So, please plan to be with us every Thursday at 17:30 UTC, right here on The Voice of America.
VOA Africa has built a successful, effective social media strategy through Facebook, YouTube, Twitter, and other digital platforms. We are responding to our audience on the African continent and in the global diaspora. We believe in the power of connection and interaction to bring you news that is comprehensive, accurate, and objective. We see the changes in technology as an opportunity to engage with our audiences about the issues that affect them. At VOA Africa, we don't just report the news, we help shape the conversation on the continent. VOA, your trusted source for news and information.
Hello, Africa. This is James Butte, host of Voice of America's Daybreak Africa. Join me Monday through Friday at 3, 4, 5, and 6 hours UTC for the latest in African news, features, and sports. We are also available on the internet at www.voaafrica.com. That's Daybreak Africa, your breakfast show on the Voice of America.
voaafrica.com.
On voaafrica.com,
The news updates never stop. Our primary goal is to keep you informed.
VOAAfrica.com, your trusted source for news and information.